What's happening? What's happening? What's happening, blues people? We are live at the Southern Ohio Folklife office. Not even getting ready. We are setting off and launching this blues weekend. So it's almost, well, it's not almost like, right? We kind of went from Black History Month right into Women's History Month, and we're celebrating the roots of American music, the roots of world music through the African-American folklore. And with that, of course, the blues. And sitting with me, two lovely ladies, Lady D to my left, and Lady Cassie to my right. And so we're in Southern Ohio Folklife Office, and we're going to get to it. So first, I just want to say that at 2:30, yes, 2:30, we're having the Blues Narrative Workshop, and then at 4:30, right?
At 3:30 is your Blues Narrative Workshop today.
I'm on CST time, folks. I'm sorry.
That's right. Yeah. 3:30 Eastern time is going to be the Blues Narrative Workshop at the 14th Street Community Center.
Right.
And Miss Lady D is going to be doing her performance of The Lady and the Empress at the Southern Ohio Museum at 6 p.m. tonight.
Right. Okay. So with that being said, my next thing to tell you is please forgive us for being a couple of minutes late. If it was up to me, we would have been a whole hour late because I'm on CST time. Please forgive me. And that's central time for those thinking I'm saying something else. But we want to start with Lady D, her story, and then this performance without giving too much away that she's doing this evening. So my first question to you, Lady D, is... when did you start singing blues?
Wow. I guess probably around 1995, something like that. And at the time, I wasn't really thinking of it as blues because a lot of the tunes that I was doing, well, it's sort of a roundabout story, but I found Bessie Smith before I knew who Bessie Smith was and knew that that was her music because I was doing a lot of acting at the time. And I did a show called Blues in the Night. And I love that music. And a couple of the tunes in that show were Bessie Smith tunes. But I didn't, you know, I was too young and stupid at the time to realize what was really happening in this show. Right, you know, right. I was just thinking of, you know, I'm getting to act, you know, so that was just a lot of fun. So fast forward. Later on to about 2002 was when I left the theater that I was at. It was a professional theater called Theater West Virginia. We did outdoor dramas. And the choreographer there, she suggested that I write my own one-woman show. And I thought, mm-hmm. Okay, well, that'd be kind of cool. And I was trying to figure out who to do. You know, I had all these people, Sarah Vaughan, all these people that I had loved, you know. But I thought, you know, well, everybody knows them. I wanted to do somebody that wasn't well-known to me. Once again, me being stupid and kind of young and not really knowing what was going on. But I had all these, that was before Google really was, you know, had a lot of information. An encyclopedia fell on the floor. Mm. And open to the page with Bessie Smith on it. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I started reading about her and then I said, well, I got to find out some more about her. And we just clicked and it's been me and Bessie since ever 2002. Since. Yeah.
Wow. Talk about divine intervention. Listen, those who are watching, if you have any questions for Lady D, just drop it inside of the of the post, okay? So... you kind of answered my next question because what I was wondering was it your acting that inspired you to connect music and acting to have a one-woman show based on a singer? But you kind of answered that already, so we have to ask another question. So now my question is, as you started diving into Bessie, what did it open up in regards to finding out about the blues and the blues people and how it connects to your life and culture?
Well, it's, you know, anytime you get on the internet or even back then, you know, reading encyclopedias, and I bought every book I could find about Bessie Smith. Of course, other people are going to get mentioned in there. Right. And you're like, well, who is this person? So then you're off, you know, a little bit off the path there and starting to read about other people like Sippy Wallace and Mamie Smith, you know, who was actually the first woman to record the blues. And it was just so interesting in how all these people, and especially in that era, Bessie Smith's era, which was classic blues era, sort of opened the door to R&B as we know it now. And it was just, you know, I was just amazed. And I'm, you know, at the time I was like, you know, anybody I ran into or had a conversation with, you know, I'd tell them what I was doing. I was like, did you know this? And did you know that? And they're like, no, you know, people were just sick of hearing me talk about what I have discovered, because it was like, you know, I was the only person that knew this stuff. So it was really exciting for me to start researching Bessie Smith. And then I got involved, you know, in live blues and going to blues shows. And then I actually started a blues festival of my own. And so I kind of, you know, I got into the world where, you know, now I'm friends with a lot of blues singers. And it's really like a family of people. And I just, I love blues and I love the people that perform the blues.
What interesting thing you found out about Bessie that maybe relates to you as a singer or a Black woman?
Well, the thing about Bessie is that she was very much her own person, her own boss. She didn't have an agent. She didn't even, in the beginning, she never used a drummer. Her band had to follow her tempo and keep it. And so later on, after she got with Columbia Records, of course, they told Bessie, you got to have a drummer.
Right.
You
know? So,
but I mean, she was everything. She was the last word on everything that happened. And I love a story that I read about her performing at the 81 Theater in New Orleans. And when she got there, the manager had gotten her a whole new lineup of dancers that were light-skinned and thin, because the dancers that she had that traveled with her were dark-skinned and they were kind of thick.
Right.
You know, and she said she refused to go on because she said she's not using any other dancers. She wanted dancers that looked like her.
Right.
So, I mean, that was, I thought, okay, you know, and she was a very astute businesswoman, and she refused, you know, to bow down to anybody. I didn't find a lot of occurrences of where racism kept her down.
Right.
You know, she, there's even a story about her which is a true story. I found out that she had a show in Tennessee near Chattanooga and was in the tent, and the Ku Klux Klan came around and said that the people couldn't come in to the show. And she went out and confronted the main person, the Klan's person, and told him, you know, that if they're going to do something, then, you know, they'll have to come through her first. And she had a stick that she found on the ground, and they turned around and left, and the people were cheering and they came on in. And the show went on, and I thought that was so cool too.
Yeah, she was definitely a tier one badass.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I really, I'm happy you brought that story up about how, well, she experienced colorism, and she experienced the brown paper bag, not only era, but she was raided by the brown paper bag from Black Swan Records. Mm-hmm. That's why they didn't sign her. I'm really happy you brought that up, because colorism was a major thing, and she stuck to her guns and did what we know as Black folk music from the backwoods. Mm-hmm. So speaking of Black, wait a minute. Do we have a comment here?
It says, outstanding, bravo, from R.D. Leonard.
Hey, what's happening, Rick? Okay. Singing stop. Because she does what some folk call gut bucket, some folk call backwoods, the legitimate black church style singing. There's a whole bunch of names. How do you approach that? Did you always sing that way? Did you come out to church? Was it easy? Was it natural?
Well, of course, yeah, I came out to church. I mean, there's just no other no other path. But yeah, that was one of the things when I was researching her. Like I said, this encyclopedia fell open, mm-hmm. and I started reading about Bessie, and it was like she just, I don't want to say possessed me, because I got in trouble doing a show a few months ago. In West Virginia, in one of those counties that is very much a red county.
Right.
And in the press, they said, and this was part of the press that I used to use, saying that I channeled Bessie Smith. And so I was accused of witchcraft before doing that show. So that was a big issue. And that was like the most excitement I've ever had around that show before. But anyway, I listened to all of her music that I could find. And she and I, we talk. And I said, Bessie, I don't sound like you. And she said, don't worry about that. You just get the attitude right and just go from there. And she told me which songs to use in what place. I wrote the show in 24 hours. And So since then, I don't really listen to a lot of Bessie anymore, because I don't want to try to imitate now, you know, from what I've been doing. What I have been doing for the last 20 years seems to work.
Right.
So right. I don't mess with it.
And it sounds like Bessie's happy with what you're doing.
Yeah, she said, you know, you don't have to try to imitate me. Just get the attitude right. And that seemed to be what she wanted.
Let me ask you a question. There's, and remember, y'all, you can ask Lady D a question as well, okay? There's a spiritual aspect of this. You're speaking with Bessie, you honoring the ancestor. How did that come about? Is that part of your personal makeup? Did it just happen that way? You know, how do we get there?
Well, I'd never done anything like that before. Like I said, it was suggested to me that I write a one-woman show. And that was, of course, you know, like everybody else, you like to see movies and things on television about people, you know, who are not with us anymore. But I didn't want to dishonor Bessie's memory. And that was what worried me, because there's only one video, St. Louis Blues, that shows her singing and speaking. And it's like 15 minutes long. So it was, you know, not much to work with. And so, yeah, I just had a lot of conversations with Bessie about, is this okay? And that's just me, because I don't want to do anything that would make her look bad.
Right.
You know,
yes.
So.
Yes. So is it safe to say you sought out the okay from the ancestors?
Right.
To actually...
Right.
Yes. Yes. I dig that a lot. So. Can you tell us a little bit about the show without giving too much away?
Well, Bessie is in her boudoir, and there just happens to be a band in her boudoir. So this requires a lot of suspension of disbelief, you know?
Like, right,
you
know, right.
You just believe that this is, you know,
happening.
Okay. Yeah. So the first half of the show, she's basically getting ready to go out for a night on the town. And she's telling you about where she grew up, how things were. She came along when she started performing with Ma Rainey,
mm-hmm.
Brought her into her troupe, and she was with them for a while. And then people started asking for her to sing, you know, by herself, and her travels, mostly up north. She really never covered a whole lot of territory as far as the country. She never went any farther west than Chicago and no further east than New York. And, you know, that way she never went overseas. And I think if she had lived longer, she would have. But at the time, that's just that was her territory, you know, in the South and the Northeast. And she tells, you know, a few stories, you know, kind of funny. And she's imbibing a little bit along the way. So, you know, she's a little tipsy by the end of the show. But
any knife fights? Because she was known for that.
Just in the song, one of the songs that she does.
Right.
See, I even refer to, you know, her as she's not me, but her.
Well, so that's very interesting that you are able to. I want to say it like this. So forgive me the detachment. How you can separate the two? How does that work? Like in your mind, in your spirit, do you kind of step out of your body and let her step in? How does that work when you're about to go into character?
Yeah, I think so. You know, she's sort of like always there. So it's like a switch that I can turn on and off. And the thing I like about Bessie, I mean, this show has evolved over the 20 years. Mm-hmm. And when I first started the show, it was very much a play, you know, present it
right
to the audience. Now, a lot of it is interacting with the audience as well, because, you know, a lot of times people will, I don't want to say heckle, but they'll say something to Bessie and Bessie just
responds in the moment.
In Bessie form. Yeah. Which is fun. It makes it even more fun.
Do you want to say something to Bessie?
How you feeling about being in Portsmouth? Ohio.
Well, you know, I ain't never been to Portsmouth before. I don't believe. I can't hardly recollect all the places I've been, but we're going to see. But I usually judge places by the kind of liquor they give me before the show. Now, we'll see what happens this evening.
We'll make sure we get you set up right.
Okay. All right.
You want no smoke with Bessie.
Does Bessie like moonshine?
Of course I like moonshine. I'm from Chattanooga, Tennessee.
That's right. So now, Southern Ohio folk life brought Bessie to Portsmouth. Did I say it correctly?
Portsmouth, or some people call it Portsmouth.
Aha, okay. So do you want to get on camera?
Sure, yeah. Let's see.
Do you want me to get up?
No, I'll come sit next to you guys. This is great.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So yeah. Tell us about how you got Bessie to come to Ohio.
Well, I'm really excited, first of all, that you guys are here today and for this conversation. So welcome on behalf of Southern Ohio Folk Life, Portsmouth, Ohio, and all of the Southern Ohio region. We'll just speak for all of them.
Yes.
Welcome to Ohio. And so I went to the Waymakers Collective gathering. And that was in Harlan County, Kentucky, several months ago. And I saw Lady D, and we had already been on a program together. Actually, it's from Mid-Atlantic Arts, who's funding this particular program for us. Thank you, Mid-Atlantic Arts and the Central Appalachia Living Traditions Program for helping us make this work today. We had been on a program that was surveying the folk and traditional arts throughout the Central Appalachian region. And we were both steering committee members for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew Lady D, and we were so excited. We had no idea we were going to be there at the same time. And so a member of my board, Edwin Martell, shout out to Edwin. He said, as soon as he met you, he said, "So when are you coming to Portsmouth?" And I said, "Well, that's an invitation. Now we have, that is an invitation." So now we have to step up to that invitation. And I was more than happy to, because I have had such a pleasure working with you in the past.
Thank you.
And just hearing your critical perspective during that survey that we did and that we participated in. So as soon as I knew that Lady D, that we were going to be writing a grant to get Lady D here, I said, well, we're going to need Lamont, like, obviously. And I just thought that the two of you guys coming together would be magic.
Yes.
And it already has been. And then this is actually just kicking off the start of the implementation of that magic. So thank you for hopping on with us.
Not a problem. I love it when it comes to the blues, when it comes to the communities, and when it comes to good friends, I'm there.
It's all together.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So now, is this the first blues program for Southern Ohio Folklife?
Yes, it is. Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so how excited are you?
Oh, I am thrilled. I am absolutely thrilled. And I'm really excited that you two are going to be bringing expertise,
yes,
performance, a workshop for the kids to think about the through lines between the blues and hip hop.
Yes.
I think we've got three events this weekend, yes, and we're going to be covering a lot of ground together.
Yes. And wow. And just the weekend, I feel like I'm doing like I can't remember, a Jerry Lewis telethon the way I just said that. So let me just slow down. Sorry, folks. Because I almost forget. Anyway, so now with that, you mentioned Mid-Atlantic Arts, right?
Yeah.
Who else has collaborated with us and sponsored so this can happen?
Absolutely. We got lots of great folks lined up here. So as we said, Mid-Atlantic Arts and their Central Appalachia Living Traditions Program has given us the grant money to make this happen. We have major collaborators that are hosting us in their venues. That's the Southern Ohio Museum and Cultural Center, which is actually just right across the way from us here. The 14th Street Community Center and a really incredible and amazing longtime running community center that has been the cornerstone of the Black community and just the entire community for over 100 years.
Oh, my goodness.
That's right.
So we're in a historically Black community.
We will be shortly.
Okay. Do you have could you tell us anything about that? Because that makes, everything we just discussed makes this extremely significant.
Yeah.
But the icing on the cake, if you will, that this is happening in a historically Black community in Southern Ohio. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you can tell us about that community?
Yeah, well, very welcoming. I've always had an incredible time at the center. They have engaged in mutual aid for a very long time. Actually, what I should say most of all is that there are lots of folks who have done great research about the Black community in Portsmouth and in Southern Ohio. And one of the places that you can find out more is by going to Scioto Historical. It is an app and it's also a website, and it's run by our good friend and colleague, Andrew Feit. He's a professor at Shawnee State University, and he does work on digital history,
mm-hmm,
especially mm-hmm in Appalachia, and particularly about the Black experience here. And he goes, really far back in history, all the way to the present. And you should read the articles on his website, because he really does a great job of delving into that history. And that's actually geolocated.
Uh-huh.
So he will have a pinpoint for a particular location and provide that history, have references. And then you've also got typically images that are really rich.
So make sure you all go to that. I wish I had the link to put it up for you. Maybe we can get that later. How do you feel about that, Bessie? And then we'll ask Lady D.
Well, all I know is I got a show to do tonight, and that's what my mind is on.
Oh, right now.
Mm-hmm.
How does Bessie, how do you feel about, because in your day, you jumped into the modern day. In your day, there was a green book. There was ways you had to travel to go to these locations. How do you feel about, in this day and age, going to a historically Black community and performing for them?
Well, you know what? This is going to be exciting, because I tell you something. You see, when I started to hit pretty big and went to New York and Harlem, especially, that's where I lived at. You know, it was a lot of color folk up there that just come from down south.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't want to hear the blues no more. It was mostly white folk up there that was listening to the blues, but the color folk didn't want to hear it no more because they wanted to let all that go. They said it was bad feelings and all that, but see, I'm see what these folk are like here this evening.
I think so. I have to ask this to Lady D, because Bessie brings up how are we doing on time, Cassie?
We're doing good. It's 12:38.
Okay, cool. Bessie brings up something very important. The fact that the blues, black folk kind of, a group of them, not all of them, separated from it because of the bad taste, if you will, it left of Jim Crow and minstrelsy and vaudeville and lynching and all the things that come with the memories of that era of the South. And we're kind of making a strong concerted effort right now to reconnect, to reclaim the birthright and the narrative. How do you feel about that? Are you seeing more black folk involved? Are you still seeing people like, you know, what are you seeing right now?
Well, it's the same now as most of my audiences are like 98% white. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting that wherever I go, it's like black people don't want to see something like this. They don't want to hear that type of blues. They don't want to hear about that history. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting to me that they feel that way. Yeah. And the thing is, I guess when I was a teenager, I thought nothing of blues. I mean, there was R&B, you know, but I didn't think about the blues part of it.
Right.
But I liked all music. So just whatever sounded good to me was fine. But I didn't know like the history that went along with a lot of that music until I was way into adulthood.
There's, ironically, we're in Women's History Month. You speak of classic blues, which is the woman's movement of blues. And what makes that so significant, it was the classic blues movement that not only puts black music on the map, but American music on the map as a commercial commodity, right? And I hope I can remember this woman's name by the time we give the workshop. But she predates, obviously, Lil' Kim, Nicki Minaj, Cardi B, Megan Thee Stallion, what's the other one's name? Sexy Red, I think. All these young ladies right now, there's a woman who predates them and in the teens and 20s was doing songs like that and dressing like that. So I bring this up to ask you, and this is more of an opinion rather than, you know, because I've noticed what you noticed too. So in not wanting to be reminded of those days, what do you think about the fact that even though some people are trying to be separated from that, they don't realize they're still engaged in the same cultural expression when they listen to today's black music?
Right. Yeah, it's really interesting because it's like now the big argument is Beyonce and country,
right?
You know, and so it's, to me, it's like we influenced all the music. As soon as we got here, we influenced all the Scottish people and the Irish people and the Germans and all that, took a little bit of what we had and called it something else. But it's like, we are the music makers, mm-hmm. and we are the soul of the music. And so I, because I'm old now, I guess, I understand, you know, how young people, oh, I don't want to hear that, or I don't want to, you know. But, you know, when I've done workshops and I talk about Bessie, and I used to tell kids, I said Bessie Smith was sort of the Lil' Kim of the 20s, you know,
right, exactly.
And they understood that.
Okay.
And so then they were more willing to like, I guess, be open to the music, the sound of the music and the words and, you know, the double entendre of a lot of the songs and things. But these were younger kids. These were like some elementary and middle school kids. Once they get to high school, they are in their own world. Then so they're not as open, but yeah, it's, you know, I would like to see, you know, kids, they need to be taught about the history and the music, and adults need to get back you know, to right. to this music.
Yes.
You know, and so yes. I would love to see a renaissance, so to speak, of our people coming back to the blues, to the roots, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's what you're about to ask some questions.
Oh, sorry.
Where are you going? You're trying to leave.
My leg's falling.
Oh, sorry.
There we go. I was going to switch it up. There we go.
I'm sorry. So, but yeah, there is a renaissance happening right now, and I'm very excited about that. With us, John Tavius, Willis Martise, Knox, Kingfish, Veronica Jackson, Piedmont Blues Acoustic, Piedmont Blues Acoustic Duo, which is Valerie Turner and Ben Turner, and so many more people. I wish I could name everybody, but I can't. But tonight is Lady D, and that's what we're here for. Sister Cassie, what questions would you like to ask Lady D?
Well, Lady D, one of the things that I was really excited about is learning that, where Bessie Smith was born, looking at Tennessee, and you were talking about where she toured. And, you know, I'm thinking that's in the Appalachian region, and that's stuff that I'm interested in. And you're from West Virginia.
Right.
And I wanted to know, what is the blues scene like in West Virginia and Appalachia?
Good question.
There is no blues scene in West
you
Virginia.
You are the blues scene.
I am the blues scene, pretty much. There's a blues society, a Huntington Blues Society, and they're still pretty young. But as far as somebody who looks like me singing the blues, I'm pretty much it for mm-hmm. West Virginia. Unless there's somebody, I would love to see somebody else come along. You know, there's several bands in West Virginia that call themselves a blues band because they know a Muddy Waters tune or whatever, so they can get on, you know, different festivals and things. But actually doing the blues, that's me, I guess. Yeah.
Amazing. And have you been to other states in Appalachia besides West Virginia and now Ohio?
Well, yeah, performed down in South Carolina quite a bit. I had been over in DC quite a bit. I haven't been over there for the last couple of years, but I just went to Tennessee, took the Bessie show to Tennessee last week for the first time. I've been trying to get into Chattanooga for years and can never get anybody to talk to me. And I would think that because that's Bessie Smith's home, they would want, you know, a show like this. But hey, so if there's anybody out there from Chattanooga.
Brother Isaac, help us out. Have you been to the Riverside Hotel in Mississippi, Clarksville?
No, I haven't been down there. Even though I lived in Mississippi for a while, that was way before I met Bessie. So now I need to go to Clarksdale and those places.
Ron, Ms. Z, Robin, let's come on, help us out here.
So my other question is, you were talking about Bessie touring. And being on the road, and you're touring and on the road. And I'm curious, what kinds of similarities or differences do you think you guys are having in your touring experiences?
I think, I don't want to give too much away about what's in the show, but I mean, Bessie, well, she had a railroad car that she used because, you know, traveling back and forth, north to south, quite a bit. She went down south quite often and performed for those same low wages she started with. Even during the Depression, she performed all through the Depression era when a lot of blues singers stopped because there was no, you know, money. But her thing was basically quantity, you know, over quality. She would go back down and perform for, you know, the 25 cents and, you know, that kind of thing. Of course, now everybody being in cars and you can get, you know, somewhere that's 200 miles away in 2 hours. It's a lot different from Bessie's situation. And something Lamont and I were talking about earlier, just on the short ride over here, I can't remember what it was that we passed. And he was saying, I wonder if Black people are welcomed in there. And I thought, you know, that's something that we always have to think about, even now, traveling, you know, even though it's not the Green Book era anymore, but especially from these last, you know, 4 or 5 years or so, things have changed so much that we have to be careful about where we stop, you know, to get gas or go to the restroom or something like that, or eat. You know, you look around and you see it. If you see a few Black people, then you feel, okay, it must be okay here. But that's something that Black people always have in the back of their minds that I don't, white people don't think about. But, you know, and this morning when I was getting ready, I thought about that too with my parents, because I'm trying to write something about my father, who was born in Selma, Alabama in 1911. And he came to West Virginia during the mine wars, and he started work in the mines when he was 11 years old.
Wow.
And yeah, and he always hated the thought of going back down south. And so when I got married and said I was going to Mississippi, he almost had a heart attack. No, you can't go to Mississippi. That's worse than Alabama. And, you know, when I went down there, I'm like, I loved it down there along the coast. But then I got to thinking this morning about when I was very young, we never really went anyplace, took trips, you know, and even we didn't go anywhere that was like more than an hour away. But it wasn't until the 70s that my father wanted to travel. We went to Disney World and those places. And then I got to thinking this morning, I wonder if they really didn't want to go places because it was hard to know, you know, what the trip was going
to
be like.
Where to stop.
And yeah. And that I just, yeah.
You know, well, see, I'm so happy you brought that up, because one of the major functions, at least for me, outside of performance and interviewing, is to put our blues narrative in the proper perspective, in the proper context, remove this nostalgia as if, you know, these were better times than they were, right? And it's like, for your father, and he did not want to go back to Mississippi, you know, where our audience members who are not Black, but we love them because they love us, you know, they don't understand the fact that the people who come from these places and made these musics may not have wanted to go back because their life might have been in jeopardy. You know, so the nostalgic part of the blues really, we have to do something about that. Not nostalgic as in having a great performance like what you're doing. Not nostalgic as having a, you know, sometimes I get in my little son house mode. I mean, nostalgic as if the Jim Crow South and these juke joints were like Disneyland, because they were not. People were getting hurt badly. Not to bring down the vibe, but just to give you a bit of reality to what the blues is. And if I may, that reflects hip hop, right? So there's a nostalgia in hip hop where everything was fun and dance. And I've been to some of these places, and it was equivalent to these juke joints. So we want to, on one hand, understand the connection, but on the other hand, not play it up as if it was, you know, Sesame Street. It was more like the Electric Company. You know what I mean? Could you see what that says?
Yeah, yeah. So I didn't want to stop your flow. You were moving. I like it. So Miss Maureen asked a question, and I'm really excited because Miss Maureen, speaking of what you're talking about right now, of making sure that we have that critical perspective on the past and keep that very present. Miss Maureen actually curated the exhibit that's at the Southern Ohio Museum right now. It's in there until March 27th. And it is artifacts from the Jim Crow era and from, like there's actual slave handcuffs. And so there's an incredible exhibit that she curated there she is an incredible archivist, community archivist, public speaker. She does all of the MLK events and has an incredible quilt collection. So Miss Maureen, I hope you're there tonight.
Yes.
So she says, Bessie, Are you going to sing Ain't Nobody's Business?
I sure am.
Yeah. Come on down, Miss Marie.
Come on out and hear it.
And make sure you come and hang out with us. I just want to give a little plug that if you want to come and hang out with Lamont and Lady D and Bessie, we will be at Port City Pub in the front room at 4 p.m. So come and hang out with us after the performances tomorrow. That's Saturday. So Saturday, Port City Pub, 4 p.m. Come hang out with us. Oh, Miss Maureen says she'll be there.
Yay.
All well, right. I'm looking forward to meeting you.
That's right. That's one of the things I was really excited about with you guys being here is there is an incredible community here, and the Black community here brings that critical perspective, mutual aid, welcoming everybody to the center. Right. It's all here. And I think that the connections that we're going to form are going to continue. And I think that you guys have a home in Portsmouth forever now.
That's great to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah, I may need to move.
Come on. We're ready. Yeah. You can bring your, the only blues performance show in West Virginia. You can just go ahead and come on here. We'll share you, though.
We can share. Wait a minute. Isn't this the only blues performance that's happened here as of yet?
Now, for our organization, yes. I cannot say.
For the entire.
So, actually, no. Oh, hold on a minute. Okay. Now I'm going to get my history right. So, and this is recent history. The 14th Street Community Center does a, they do a soul food festival. Uh-huh. A really great soul food festival.
Food Ways.
Yes. Oh, Drew Carter's.
This Drew, is- what's happening? What?
Yeah.
Hi, Drew.
He says, we're excited to have you out in Portsmouth, Ohio. Great interview. Thank you, Drew.
Thank you, sir.
Drew Carter makes everything happen, along with Miss Cadogan and Miss Maureen, that make it all happen.
So you were telling us about the history. So they have the soul food night, but not yet the blues night to go with the soul. Because we're dipping into our folkloristic hats, right? Huh. So we have Food Ways, soul food, which soul food is an extension of Southern food, which migrates with the blues.
Yeah, I think Miss Maureen and Drew can probably answer this better than me, or if Drew Fight is on this call, he could probably help more.
Or we can just have Lady D perform while they're cooking soul food. And I can just be in the back off camera.
You need to come to the Soul Food and Music Festival. You just made the connection.
When is
that? It's in the summer usually. Yeah.
Well, give me a date and I'll try to make that happen.
All right. Drew Carter, let's get on that. We'll do a little collab for that.
Yes. Any other questions from y'all for either Bessie, Lady D, Cassie, or even me?
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you ever been in Ohio before?
I've driven through Ohio to get to Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That was it.
All right. That was from New York to Bowling Green?
Yes. The 16-hour drive during COVID. Mm, yes.
Man.
Quarantine, I should say. So we drove through and we stopped in Ohio at a Kroger. That was about it. So this is like my first real experience in Ohio.
Well, welcome to Ohio.
Thank you.
Yes. And especially to Portsmouth. This is a great place. I think you guys are going to have a good time hanging out with everybody. And I think that you guys are going to help to connect with the great cultural work that's happening here already and only enhance it.
Yes. Yeah. I would say, and this is not my expertise, but you've given me an opportunity to use this term. The vernacular architecture here is exquisite. I never get the chance to use that word. But looking at the way the buildings and the streets and the little community look so far, it is it's really welcoming. And it's I hate to sound nostalgic after just getting on a pedestal about nostalgia, but it has a feel, a warm feel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're going to get even warmer once we get to the 14th Street Community Center, because you're going to feel the love that fuels that place.
Can we discuss one of their new attractions?
Yeah.
Briefly, could you tell the folk what is going on there?
Hey, so the 14th Street Community Center, as I understand it, and I've seen it, they have a podcast booth now. They had a grant. They got a grant that helped them to get a podcast booth, and they got another grant to continue to build it out and to get the equipment put in there. And part of the grant that we had for this event is also going to support that podcast booth. Because we want to hear what the youth are saying. We want to hear the music that they're making and what they're saying about their lives and experiences. So congratulations to the 14th Street Community Center on all of your great work and for putting together the podcast room. So Lamont is really excited to get out and see it.
I am. I am part of the Blues Narrative Workshop is encouraging folks of the community and of their own families to document their stories, whether it's through ethnographic interviews or oral history or however you know how to do it right now, you know, and that space will be a great place to begin documenting the wonderful stories of this community. That's how I feel about it. Am I wrong? Am I right? I don't know.
You're always right.
Oh, I like that. So, Lady D, would you like to give us a piece of anything that's going to happen tonight? Even if you turn to Bessie for maybe a half a stanza?
Let's see. What am I?
Smidgen of a song. Maybe.
Up in Harlem every Saturday night, when the highbrows get together, it's just too tight. They congregate in an all-night strut. And what they do is they tut, tut, tut. Now old Hannah Brown from Crosstown gets full corn and starts breaking it down. Just at the break of day, you can hear old Hannah say, give me a pig foot and a bottle of beer. Send me gate, I don't care. I feels just like I want a clown. Give the piano player a drink because he's bringing me down. I'll leave it right there.
Woo! Make sure y'all come out. Do you have any other last things to add?
I defer to that.
So come on out this evening. Let them know where it's at again, please.
All right. So 6 p.m. tonight at Southern Ohio Museum. You can come see Lady D, Lady and the Empress. Also, if you guys are around after school today, Lamont's going to be at the 14th Street Community Center at 3:30 p.m. And he's going to be doing a blues narrative workshop. And you'll be able to learn and talk about the connection between the blues and hip hop and write your own stanzas. And then tomorrow, Saturday, we've got Lady D performing again, and she's going to be performing Bessie's Blues. And that's at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Southern Ohio Museum. And that is a performance that's specifically for the young folks. And that's for kids ages 5 to 12, primarily.
Yeah.
That's for everybody.
Or just anybody.
Yeah, it's for everybody.
For the family.
Yep, for the family. Bring your kids out. Come on out. 2 o'clock, Southern Ohio Museum on Saturday. And then if you're around, follow us on over to Port City Pub. We'll be in the front room on Saturday at 4 o'clock to hang out with our buds.
Groovy. Now remember, if you have not already, subscribed to the Jack Dapper Blues YouTube channel and go to the Jack Dapper Blues radio.tv website, subscribe to the mailing. The Southern Ohio Folklife Instagram and Facebook. There, Lady D, what are your handles for your social medias?
Oh, I got so many of them. There's the Lady and the Empress page on Facebook, and there's the Lady D page. There's also, well, the Simply Jazz and Blues page is another one that I have because that's the festival that I used to do. And Lady D's Not Just Music, that's another page that I have. That's where all my artwork is. I think that's all that's pertinent right now.
Okay. Now you know where to find it and find the rest of us, and you know where we'll be at. Hopefully we've sparked, triggered in a good way, a desire to want to dive in and learn a little bit more, because it's not about kumbaya, but it's about understanding. And if we can have understanding, that's a start. So we learn each other's culture to have an understanding, right? All right, good folk, we got works to do. So we're going to see y'all later.
All right. And everything is free and open to the public that we mentioned.
Key, yeah, that's key.
Free and open to the public.
All right. Take care.
Thanks, Lamont.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lady D.
Thank you. I'm glad you could read all that small print.
Yeah. I have really